I'm Zeke Binion.
And I'm Matt Rich.
I lead product design at Participate, a company designed to empower educators to grow and impact students around the world. And I'm the founder of CodeForDesigners.com.
I'm a front-end developer at TableXi, a UX design and software development company located in Chicago.
And this is ProductShip.fm. We're a show about what it takes to design and build products that people love to use.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Product Ship. In this episode, Zeke and I talk about why developers are just so slow. No, rather, why there is this feeling that developers are always so slow. It's, as you probably guessed, a little bit more of a complicated question. And there's a lot of nuance to this idea. And a lot of external factors and just sort of how software development works and all sorts of things that can go into sort of why it feels like it takes a long time for something to get built, for a developer to build something. I think it's something that we butt up against no matter where you are in the software development life cycle quite often. So we thought this was a really interesting thing to sort of dissect and kind of dig into a little bit and maybe provide everybody with a little more understanding about how all this works. Hope you enjoy the show.
All right.
Okay, here we go. So we are going to talk about a fun topic, I think. And it is an extremely clickbaity topic. So, you know, we'll see where this goes. Zeke came up with that one for us.
Yeah, totally.
But why are devs so slow, Zeke? Why are we so slow? It takes us forever to do anything.
Yeah, we're pretty horrible. Everything takes forever. I think I can get someone to do this in 2 seconds.
Yeah, it's just easy.
Yeah,
it's easy. Yeah, so we hear this a lot.
yeah,
and I think sometimes it's potentially justified. There are certainly situations where things may take longer than they should have, and that happens to the best of us. But I think a lot of times there's maybe just like some misunderstanding about what it takes to actually implement certain things, you know, from writing the code, I guess, of a feature or something.
Yeah.
There's some common misunderstandings, I think. And I guess let's maybe talk about where does this come from? Where does this question usually manifest itself?
Yeah. So I don't know about you, but I think I tend to hear these from, I tend to hear them from project managers. I tend to hear them from business stakeholders. Sometimes I hear this from from designers too. But I think it's usually comes from the folks that just have no experience doing development work. And in part, that question usually is a sign of frustration, I think, and that there was something they asked for, something they've been doing that's been happening over the course of time, and they're looking to get something out the door quick, fast, and in a hurry. And they assume just because it's a few lines of code, just kind of like writing, I don't know, a paper for high school. You know, here, you're just writing maybe 100 words. Just that should be quick. And I don't think people have sort of a mental frame of reference for what it's actually like to build software and consider all the ramifications of the code you're writing.
Sure. Yeah, I think that you're right. The manifestation is a lot of times influenced by some external factor, like we're getting a little behind schedule, or the budget is shrinking and we have all this work to do. You know, sort of those things end up influencing, I think, probably they skew the perspective of how fast I think you should be able to work on something. And I think when you combine that with, I think you're right. It probably does come up in more of the project manager type roles. It comes from that individual probably more often than not. Yeah. And a lot of times it's more maybe people that haven't had a lot of time in the software industry. I feel like other folks that have been around for a while sort of just have more of a, they brace themselves for like, and this goes the other way too, for what it's worth. Sometimes someone will think, oh, that's probably it. That seems super complicated. That's going to take forever to do. I'm like, oh no, that's actually a pretty easy one. You know, that'll be pretty quick. Oh, you know, I think so. With experience comes sort of probably a little bit of understanding for the general sense of like how long stuff takes.
Yeah, something that's weird about development too, and you know, I kind of talk to people in this analogy of like factory work because I think it's a pretty easy thing for people to see. You know, if you're building a car, for example, I don't know the exact amount of time, but it doesn't take a day for a factory to produce one car. You know, they can produce multiple cars and mm-hmm. output them almost the same quality every time. And a lot of people might have this analogy where they think development work is kind of like a factory. Here's this thing that goes in and it comes out.
Right.
The problem with that analogy is that in a factory setting, you have the exact blueprints of how the car should be made. You've tuned all of the equipment to produce it. You're never trying to guess what a car door should be or what a handle should be or what does the handle look like or what strength and material it should be or how is it connected to the rest of the body. The entire set of schematics is known and learned, and there's actually a process that happens before it gets put into the factory that makes sure that everything is articulated out at once.
Right. Software development is not like that.
No.
It's the more that I do this work, the more that I realize that, I don't know about an exact percentage, but like something crazy, like 80% of the job ends up being like thinking about something.
Yeah.
You know, trying to figure out how to properly connect the door to the rest of the car, you know, like what makes the most sense for this very specific situation and looking forward and all, like, so you're doing a lot of, even though the end result may be 20 lines of code, like there's probably a fair amount of thinking that went into those 20 lines and why they exist and why they are the way they are, that kind of thing. Or there really should be like to do like good professional software. That's really how the process works most of the time.
I think, honestly, the best analogy for factory work is, you know, the part of the development process we're doing most of the time is that part that happens outside the factory. If you ask the development team to rebuild the same piece of software that they've already built once, the speed is dramatically different.
For sure. All the lessons learned from the previous work and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
For sure.
I don't know about you, but I think there are these kind of funny things that happen. I remember there was a time when I was doing some front-end work, and I was building a WordPress site, and I built this thing where if someone would click on, like, a person, there would be a little pop-up that appears, and it appears at the right location and decides what side of the person it should be on based on the size of the screen and where everything is located. And that's actually pretty complex to make, but that took me just about 30 minutes. It took me 30 minutes because I've written it a million times. And then something that seemed like much easier, like put a set of boxes on a homepage and make sure that people can edit them, actually took a lot longer. I think that actually took me like a day because I hadn't figured out the best way in WordPress to create these custom fields before. And it took a lot more thought to figure out. So there's these effects where I think in development, if something is actually directly something you've done before, you can be really fast at it because you know it.
Yeah, for sure. And we all have, no matter how much experience we have, we're all coming at it with a different set of base level experience. So well, you may have, let's say I have 10 more years of experience than you, but I haven't actually specifically made that complex thing that you were just talking about before. Like that just hasn't come up for me.
Yeah.
So that will take you way less time than it would, even though theoretically I would be generally a more experienced developer. So that those aren't always a map one-to-one, you know, like just because I have more experience doesn't mean everything's going to be faster for me, for example. So that's pretty interesting to think about. And I, you know, obviously, the further along you get, the larger your toolbox gets of like, okay, I've seen this done before, or I've implemented this before.
Yeah.
You know, some stuff like that can kind of jumpstart you in the process to making a feature. I mean, it's, we certainly hit things that are just straight up unique and never done before kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, a lot of things like have been built in some capacity, someplace, somewhere before.
Yeah.
So oftentimes, you know, the more experience that you could get in doing software development, the more you have to build on from previous work, even if it's not the exact same thing. You know, you can always draw some, you know, some parallels to be like, okay, this is kind of like that other thing that I did.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna use that as my base, and that'll get me started, and then off we go, kind of thing. But yeah, if it's something new, never done before, you really got to, you know, kind of tap the brakes a little bit and really think about how to do it. And that stuff takes time for sure.
Yeah, it takes time. It takes thought. I think if you think about the set of skills that a dev needs, because a lot of people are pulling for full stack developers. And if you can't see my air quotes, I apologize for doing them in the first place. But, you know, effectively what people are looking for are these magical developers who are really good at front end, writing HTML and CSS that looks well, great, is performant, looks exactly like the design, maybe even improves it some, and also can write stuff that's going to connect to a database and write business logic. And I think 99% of the time, those folks aren't great at everything. I know there are people who are really good, truly really good. I think we both know one, actually quite a few. Most of the time, I think companies hire people who are effectively kind of back-end developers to do front and ask them to do front-end work too. And that contributes to some slowness. I mean, front-end HTML and CSS to me is just a completely different paradigm. And likewise, it's back-end work is a completely different paradigm. So I think, you know, that's, there's something to the skill set you're most comfortable in and think about the most also being an area where you're really productive. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, there's, I think that a lot of us can do a lot of things in the stack, can quote unquote be full stack developers. Like, I can hack my way through, you know, building an entire product.
Yeah.
Am I going to be fast and efficient and do the best work throughout the entire stack? No. there's certainly things that I'm more capable of and feel more comfortable with and can be more efficient at. And so I think what happens a lot at companies is, you know, like people get tasked with doing things that is a little bit out of their comfort zone or they don't have a ton of experience with. And then that slows things down. I think honestly, HTML, CSS, as that is like the base layer, most simple, technically simple thing, you know, of the web. But honestly, I think that ends up being one of those things that gets, that ends up being a pretty substantial speed bump for a lot of developers.
Yeah.
You know, we've all had conversations with folks over the years that have complained in one way or another about about writing CSS and how it's, you know, weird and tricky and they hate it and all that kind of stuff for those reasons. And, you know, and that happens a lot, but, yeah, I do get pretty skeptical of the full stack developer. Like I technically, yes, I can do all that stuff too. I still don't call myself a full stack developer because I don't, it's just not, I'm going to get stuck in certain places or going to be real slow in certain places. And at TableXI, we have quite a few folks that probably kind of fall into that same bucket.
Yeah.
But interestingly, so I would like most of my strengths are more towards the front end side of things, right? I can do some back end stuff if I need to.
Yeah.
We have other people that are sort of flipped, or just everybody ends up having like different strengths, even though maybe they can technically do a lot of the work. So a lot of times on a project, it's a matter of, you know, building the team structure to like fit those two types of workers together,
yeah,
to kind of build the most efficient team. And, you know, so, and granted, we're talking about working with teams and that kind of stuff, but having some people with some specialized skills that kind of don't overlap, that's, you know, complement each other,
yeah,
ends up making development work a lot faster. But we're not always lucky enough to be able to be on projects that have that kind of structure.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I think you're talking about where your strength really is in the backhand, although you can do it. I always tell people I would make a really, really terrible dev intern. Like, if you needed somebody to write some Ruby on Rails, I technically have taken a class, but it is definitely not the thing I should be doing for your company.
You're not going to get the most value out of me doing that work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be fun for you know what and giggles. That's about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I'm trying to think about this. So coming from someone asking the question, like, why is something taking so long? I think it's useful to consider maybe where the strengths of the individual you're talking about that's doing the work, where their strengths actually are. Yeah, maybe they probably can do a lot of stuff, but I have a suspicion that they probably have more of an expertise in certain parts of their job.
Yeah.
And those parts are going to be the things that are going to go super smooth and efficient, and the other ones are going to be a little bit slower. Not that they can't do them, but it's difficult. You know, as developers, we end up doing, especially on the web, there's a lot of stuff we end up touching a lot. You know, we do a lot of work.
Yeah.
I mean, the project that I'm on now, for example, like in a single day, I might write a little bit of Ruby on Rails code. I might write some SAS, some SCSS, and I might write some React. And that might be an entire day. I mean, those are Ooh. Three very different things. You know, just there's a lot. These are complicated projects, I guess, is my point.
I think one of the things, pieces of advice I've given people when they've asked me that question, it's around requirements gathering. I think one of the things that I think experienced developers get pretty good at is actually making sure that the requirements are very detailed that they get. And I think that contributes to, you know, some of that speed issue as well.
Totally. I'm nodding my head very, very intensely right now because that is very right. And I think we actually brought this up kind of in a way back episode, and I don't remember the name of it, but the idea of when I, as a developer, am starting to do some sort of work, if I have all the information that I need to start that work, it's going to make that work go faster.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. That's how it works. But I think what you're saying is, like, as an experienced developer, I will, when I'm picking up some piece of work, I can spot the gaps. I'm like, I don't know all the stuff I need to know to do this well.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stop and make sure I get those questions answered before I dive in. You know, whereas if I dive in, assume something, go the wrong direction, it circles back and say, you know, I have to do it again.
Yeah.
There we've just slowed down. So for sure. And I think that comes with experience or just some, I mean, maybe you hit that once and realize it and go, oh, okay. And then that sort of changes your perspective on, you know, on picking up a task.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's especially, and maybe this is where the experience comes in. And I think there are some areas that even I've experienced where, you know, I think I know how this works or how I might implement this, but I'm not 100% sure. And the stack we're using is just slightly different than what I've used for a different project or a different setup. And so, like, I'm kind of confident, but I'm not at that 100%, you know? And I think that's where I think the biggest, at least in my experience, the biggest difference has been in developers. Like, the people who know to go, you know, I don't really know this. Either let's stop and do a spike so that we can learn it, or stop and do some more detailed requirements gathering. It's just those fuzzy lines, I think, are the ones that are really the difference.
For sure. And I think that comes probably with some experience too, don't you think?
Like, yeah.
I know early in my career, I had the tendency to underestimate things pretty consistently. you always take a little bit more of an optimistic view on, oh yeah, I know how to, I can do that. And I know how to do that exactly. But then once you actually get in the weeds, you realize there's this other factor that you didn't know was there that ends up, you know, throwing a wrench in your original plan. So you got to do something different. And I mean, I think as you hit those in your career, you sort of start to, I don't know, like you almost take any piece of work with like a little bit of skepticism all the time.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I'm pretty sure this is going to be super easy, but like, just so you know, let's build, you know. And I think maybe that sort of thing ends up being why this question gets asked a lot by folks on projects, you know, project managers and others,
yeah,
other than developers, is that they've probably been burned in the past by a developer saying something like, oh yeah, that's super easy. And then 3 days later, they're still working on it because something came up that was unexpected. I mean, that's going to happen. We're never going to be able to totally get away from that. But yeah, I think as a project manager, if you hear that often enough, and it, you know, it always ends up being three times longer than the developer says, like, of course you're going to start to have this question is going to pop up all the time,
yeah,
for you.
Yeah.
You know? So I understand the frustration. I understand it.
I think I'm curious what you think about this in front end. And I'm really just thinking about HTML and CSS. I always felt like there was a large amount of work that, if you described it as an iceberg, there's sort of, if you look at like a picture of an iceberg, most of the iceberg is actually underwater. There's just a kind of a little bit that's above water. And if you think mm-hmm. of that water line as like the stuff that's visible and it feels like a design, for front end, it seems like there's a lot of stuff we have to do that just isn't really that design. It's, now that we're doing Webpack, let me get my Webpack and Babel set up and preprocessors and font kind of styles and variables set up, and just like almost like it feels like there's almost like a bootstrapping process that kind of contributes to, I think, that feeling of lack of productivity, maybe.
For sure. And I think that, for what it's worth, I think that pattern holds true outside of just HTML, CSS. I think that's a common general development pattern too. And I think, I saw a chart recently that really identified this super well that I hadn't really seen before. And I don't know if it has a name, but I think the Basecamp team and their project management tool.
Hill chart.
Yeah. So that there's this, you know, it's all of a sudden you kind of hit the top of the hill and then things just start cruising. But yeah, it's all that under the water iceberg building stuff that has to come to actually do the stuff that like is more visible and people see and can be tested by, you know, the rest of your team and that kind of stuff. It's really interesting. And I think people that don't have a lot of experience in software development get super nervous about, you know, we've been working on this project for, you know, we're 3/4 of the way through the budget and we're not even close to half done, seemingly.
Yeah.
But then what a lot of people don't realize is that last 25% can really come. If you were doing things right, you know, for the first part of the project and really doing all that base level work and getting all the stuff that you needed to build the rest of the project, then that last 25% just cruises.
Yeah.
That said, that doesn't, you have to do that first 75% right. You know, so like, again, I understand that probably people have been burned by a developer saying something similar to them in the past.
Yeah.
I realize that too. But that is an extremely common pattern. And it's probably, I mean, there's a reason why that chart type got included into a project management tool to help articulate what that looks like, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's a super cool idea.
Yeah, I'm really jazzed about them exposing that to people, because I think it's, to me, it feels like projects have a lot of uncertainty, right? And that first half where you're pushing uphill is just getting all of the details worked out. What you know, if you go back to that factory analogy, it's all the stuff that happens before you put a car.
You even start production. Building the card.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to think about. You know, that if you think about that analogy and think about that as a software development, the building of the car is not the building of the software.
No. Like,
it is the building of the building that builds the car. You know?
Yeah.
Like that's closer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the building of the building, putting the right people in place, making sure the robots are...
Yeah, hiring the right builders, like hiring the right engineers to build the building that builds the cars. You know, I mean, for sure, it's, yeah, like percentage of tasks complete. I mean, there's all sorts of metrics that I think you can measure that are really end up being a little bit of like false flags in the state of a project. Like I'm actually in the middle. I'm sort of at almost the hill part of a project right now,
mm-hmm.
where we've done a boatload of base level work. We're feeling super good. Developers are, but you know, client, project manager, persons, people are sort of like, oh, I don't know. Is everything okay? And we're feeling good. We're really liking where we're at. We're feeling comfortable and we're starting to hit cruise control right now.
Yeah.
But I think we still have theoretically like we're 3/4 of the way through the timeline of the project. But according to the tasks that are left, we're only like, you know, 50% or 60% through or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So looking at those numbers can give you a bit of a, can make you nervous, I guess. I mean, I can see that.
Reasonably. But, yeah. I guess maybe let's flip gears and maybe we did this a bit, but I'm curious just kind of in your experience in the years doing projects for clients or doing projects. Well, I guess you all have been clients technically, whether you've been working for yourself or working for an agency, like what are the things that help you get up to, I guess, increase your efficiency, increase your ability to just ramp up onto a project and get started right away.
Are you talking about starting things from scratch or inheriting things or?
Ooh, that's interesting. Let's start with from scratch and then go into inheriting.
Okay. I think starting from scratch, you have to realize that you really aren't starting from scratch every project. If you are if you're literally opening up your text editor and, you know, starting from a blank folder and a blank file, you're probably doing something wrong. As you do more development work, you realize just about everything builds on other things that you've done. Like we were saying earlier, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, you've done before that you can at least take inspiration from. So you are copying. Yeah, copying is maybe kind of a loose word, but you're using a lot of code and a lot of work that you've done previously to help get you started on future projects. And I know in the consulting world, we are always treading a balance between like what can we bring from one project to the next,
mm-hmm.
and what needs to be custom, because we build custom software still.
Yeah.
But that said, from like let's think about like the HTML CSS stuff for example. There's a lot of that iceberg that literally does not matter to what the end result looks like.
Yeah.
Like it just doesn't. There's there's a lot of crap, at least when we're talking about like these larger code bases and organizing a lot of different CSS in a logical way and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that iceberg that just, you could literally just go boom, pop it into the next project. And yeah. that gets you partway there already. So finding those areas, those things that you can use will help you accelerate, you know, a new project start. And some people I think would say, well, you should use things like Bootstrap and other frameworks and such to help you do that too. And that maybe is okay for certain projects, but not all the time. If you're truly doing custom software, you can still take things from previous projects. There is a lot that you can share, certainly.
It's interesting because I think one of the things I even use in my personal work is the idea of a starter repo where, you know, I might have my linter set up, might have like, I don't think I have Webpack in mind right now. Maybe I do. I think I was in the middle of switching from Gulp to Webpack. But it's the stuff I need to just go, here's a project. Let me just get started.
Yeah.
And I even have like my variables organized for CSS and, maybe mm-hmm. some base, just here's some nice stuff I need to know about fonts.
Yep.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of that stuff you can take between project to project maybe isn't exclusively like code, but it is here's our methodologies for writing.
Right. You definitely shouldn't be starting from scratch on that kind of stuff
yeah.
every time, you know. And I think just the because you would have some sort of a starter that you would, you know, begin a project from, that doesn't mean that you have to adhere to that 100%. you know, maybe your variable organization that you have in your starter like gets you part of the way there, and then you kind of realize, eh, this isn't quite right for this project. I'm going to adjust it. But hey, it at least got you some work, you know?
Yeah.
I think the build tool thing is a really interesting one, specifically in like the current landscape. That one is one that I know we have both, you know, it's just, it can be a huge time suck.
Yeah.
You know, trying to get your Webpack building properly or whatever you're using. It's annoying. And so getting that kind of figured out once, at least at sort of a base level, that of course you're going to change and adjust for every project, will save you just a ton of time. So
yeah, I'm really excited. I think maybe we both are about like React. What is it called? React.
The Create React app.
Yeah, Create React app. It's really great. Like, it gets me so much further, and I kind of don't care about customizing things.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about like way back learning React like years and years ago now. God, it's been a while, for quite a while now. But I had some false starts because of that. There was no, because it's such kind of a free form, you know, system.
Yeah,
you can, you know, use your own whatever build tool you want, that kind of thing. You're like, okay, well, I remember coming in to the office probably and be like, all right, Zeke, I got my this like test React project building finally, and then. That ended up being the end of my exploration, because it was like, I was just burned out. I was like, oh, that felt like such an accomplishment. And then, you know, and then I'm done. Now I'm forgetting, you know, and then I put it back down and do other stuff.
Yeah. Now I've got other stuff keeping me busy.
Yeah. So I guess the moral is, find that stuff that's not super fun to do for most people.
Yeah.
And as our time sucks, and, you know, figure them out once and then reuse them.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, that seems like pretty sage advice there. We also talked a little bit about like what accelerators might you find for a project that's already in like hitting the ground running. And you're hopping aboard a moving train, so to speak.
Yeah.
What thoughts do you have there?
Yeah, this is a more difficult one, I think. I'm trying to think of sort of what are some patterns that I use when hitting this. I think the larger message is trying to get as much of an understanding as you can of how things fit together. Where we hit those time sucks is when we're trying to integrate something that we're building back into a larger system.
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah.
I don't know if that's the right way to phrase that, but essentially, when you're starting a project partway through or inheriting something that you're adding features to, for example, you're kind of just, you're doing that from day one. You're doing that pattern, and you don't know the other system, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think trying to figure out ways to understand that other system as much as you can to help inform, you know, the new work that you're trying to do to it, or add to it, or change, you know, change it in whatever ways that you're supposed to.
Yeah, it seems like I'm kind of doing this right now too. It feels like the first question I typically try to answer that helps a lot is just like, what are the methodologies we're using? Like, what are our standards? It feels like that's kind of like the first place I start looking. And then what is the structure of the project? Like, where should I put things? And these are kind of basic questions, but they become hard to answer for especially when like the code base isn't consistent.
Or like a long running team. There's just a lot of institutional knowledge, right? That's just like baked into somebody's brain.
Yeah. You have to go ask Fred. That's the person that knows.
Right. Right. Yeah, that gets really tricky. And honestly, not every project. I think you're lucky if you can suss out some sort of a system or methodology from looking at the code. That's nice. And honestly, like, I don't necessarily, it doesn't have to match up with how I would do something. But as long as I can spot it, then you can start to see the patterns and unravel the code a lot easier. And then again, you're just trying to understand the system. You're just trying to understand, that's the sole purpose.
Yeah.
And honestly, I would say anytime you're in one of these situations, overestimate the amount of time you think it's going to take by, I don't know what the multiplier is, but, you know, don't mess around with that. It's going to take you longer, odds are, than you think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're going to uncover something that you didn't spot right away. I mean, just that happens.
Yeah, I must just 2x my estimates until I feel like I understand, like inherently understand the way we write code in this system. And I tell people, look, I have to compensate for that until I know for sure. Yep.
And I will say, having conversations like that with the rest of your team and the and your project managers and that kind of stuff will pay you dividends in the long run. It seems like as a developer saying, like, I don't know how to do that. That might take me a while. I need to check that out. Like, it feels like a, I don't know. It's not a very confident way to, you know, to do your job, but it's more realistic. And when you start talking like that and having conversations like that with your team and with your project managers, then they start to understand the complexity and the nuances of the type of work that you're doing. And nobody, I mean, if someone on my team says, I'm not sure about that, I think that might take me 4 times longer than you think it's going to take me.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. You must be seeing something. That's fine. Like, I'm going to give you the space to investigate. Let's plan for that.
I was going to add in there that I think it's kind of interesting because I think in those situations, it's helpful too when you have another dev around who hears that conversation, because then if they're seeing something different, they can help potentially unlock some stuff for you.
For sure. Yeah. It could be like, oh, I was just working on something in that part of the code base yesterday. Like, I can help you on that one.
Yeah.
And yeah. Of course, for sure. That kind of stuff. I think the thing that is going to get you into trouble over and over in your career is underestimating and not delivering on things.
Yeah.
You know, oh, that's going to take me a day, and then it takes you 3. And if you do that over and over again, that's not going to go well for you. I mean, it puts you in a stressful situation. It puts your team in a stressful situation. You know, so what if it takes you that long to do it, and that's how long it takes? You know, like, let's plan for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I think good project managers are always prioritizing effort versus value, really, whether it's business value or user value. And a project manager knowing that something's going to take 2 times what they thought, they might just reprioritize it.
Yep, exactly. There might be an adjustive priority. We might go back to the client or the stakeholder and say, hey, this thing that seems simple is actually pretty complicated, turns out. Perhaps we can adjust a little bit and save you, you know, do something similar that will fit in your budget or whatever.
Yeah,
for sure. But instead of just grabbing that task and just spending 3 times longer on it than, you know, than you thought it would, than it was slated to take, that's a bad move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're at the mark where we probably should wrap this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So in summary, everybody just lay off of the developers. No. This is a two-way thing for sure. I think there's an understanding. We need more understanding on both sides, you know, the people that are managing projects and actually the people that are doing implementation work. Yeah. Things can be more complicated than they seem, but also as developers, we should be good citizens and good team members and make sure that we discuss when these things come up and the complexities of things and make sure everybody's aware of them.
Solid.
Nothing to add on that one?
No. Yeah, it was like, you know what? No, that's kind of it.
We're all to blame. Thanks for listening to another episode of Product Ship, the show about what it takes to build and design products that people love to use.
I'm Zeke. You can find me on Twitter at ebinion, ebinion.
And I'm Matt. You can find me on Twitter at mgreich.
To listen to all of our episodes, go to productship.fm. And then please leave us a review if you'd like on your favorite podcast app. See you later.